40 greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
Let's kick off with World Cup football. Russia's preparations to host next year's big tournament will get an early test in June when it stages the FIFA Confederations Cup tournament. The competition has been described as a dress rehearsal for the World Cup, but our Voice of America football fan should remember the FIFA Confederations Cup will feature 8 national teams, while the 2018 World Cup is 4 times larger with 32 teams. As host, Russia qualified automatically for the FIFA Confederations Cup. The Russians will be joined by 2014 World Cup champion Germany and the 6 winners of the FIFA Confederation Championships in alphabetical order: Australia, Cameroon, Chile, Mexico, New Zealand, and Portugal. The matches will be played in 4 stadiums in 4 Russian cities: Moscow, Kazan, Sochi, where the 2014 Winter Olympics were held, and St. Petersburg. At a news conference in St. Petersburg, FIFA's chief competitions officer, Colin Smith, said preparations for the Confederations Cup are on track.
We look very much forward to a successful FCC. It is a key milestone in the overall planning of the World Cup, and we're very confident that together with LOC and with the Russian authorities that we will deliver an FCC which is of great football and great atmosphere for all the fans who come.
Also on hand for that St. Petersburg news conference was Fatma Samoura, FIFA's first female secretary general, who is from Senegal. She comments on the tournament's opening match, June 17th, when Russia will host New Zealand in St. Petersburg.
We can say today very confident that the kickoff match will be a great experience for all fans around the world. And I can already announce that for match number 5, Russia versus Portugal, that will be played here. There is already a house full, meaning that all the tickets have already been sold out, and that really shows how popular the FCC is gradually becoming.
That's Fatma Samoura, FIFA's first female secretary general, commenting on the FIFA Confederations Cup tournament, and she was speaking in St. Petersburg, Russia. The competition kicks off June 17th in St. Petersburg and goes through July 2nd, when the final will be played at the new Krestovsky Stadium. Now let's go to Cairo, Egypt, where the draw was held Wednesday for the group stages of African Club Football's Confederation Cup tournament. Some of our VOA football fans might be wondering, Sonny, Confederation Cup sounds a lot like that FIFA tournament you were just talking about. Well, the CAF Confederation Cup is singular confederation and is for clubs in Africa. The FIFA Confederations Cup is plural confederations, and this year is for 8 national teams from around the world. In Cairo, 16 African football clubs were placed into 4 groups of 4. Let's take a look at the groupings. In Group A, we have FUS Rabat from Morocco, Club Africain from Tunisia, Rivers United from Nigeria, and Kampala Capital City Authority FC from Uganda's capital. In Group B, it's CS Faxian from Tunisia, Platinum Stars from South Africa, MC Alger from Algeria, and Embabani Swallows from Swaziland. Group C has Zesco United from Zambia, Recreativo Libolo from Angola, Al Hilal Sports Club from Sudan, and Smuha Sporting Club from Egypt. Finally, in Group D, it's TP Mazembe from the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Super Sport United from South Africa, Horoya, a football club based in Conakry, Guinea, and CF Munana from Gabon. TP Mazembe is the defending CAF Confederation Cup champion. After qualifying for the 2017 CAF Champions League, Africa's premier club football tournament, the Lubumbashi-based club entered the Confederation Cup after they lost in the Champions League first round. The CAF Confederation Cup group stage matches are scheduled to kick off on May 12th. The top two teams in each of the four groups will advance to the quarterfinals, which will be held over two legs in September. The semifinals, also over two legs, are scheduled for late September and October. And the 2017 CAF Confederation Cup final, also over two legs, will be in November. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
G'day, mates. Remember me? This is the old sports emperor with a red-hot listening tip. That's right. Give a listen to my pal, the bright and lively Sunny Man on the Sunny Side of Sports, right here on The Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. Dr. Larry Zamoja here, Chairman, Chief Executive, Sports Radio 88.9 Brilla FM. Keep getting sporty sunshine with Sunny Young. We all do at Sports Radio 88.9 Brilla FM, broadcasting out of the cities of Lagos, Abuja, Kaduna, and Onitsha in Nigeria, as well as the World Wide Web on www.brillafm.net. I tell you this. It's always a thrill, yes, a thrill, to remain on the sunny side on Brilla with Sunny. Keep listening, Africa.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Voice of America!
They're playing basketball. We love that basketball.
The National Basketball Association playoffs continue later Wednesday night with two first-round games, one in Boston and one here in Washington. In Boston, the Boston Celtics will host the Chicago Bulls. This best-of-seven game series is tied at 2-2. And here in Washington, my beloved and sometimes magical Washington Wizards are at home against the Atlanta Hawks. This series is also tied at 2-2. In NBA playoff results Tuesday night, the Houston Rockets beat the visiting Oklahoma City Thunder 105-99 to win that series 4-1 and advance to the second round. James Harden, sporting my favorite beard in basketball, scored 34 points to help power the Rockets. Russell Westbrook had 47 points for the Thunder. Russell Westbrook saw his spectacular season come to an end, one of the greatest individual seasons in NBA history. Westbrook became the first player since Hall of Famer Oscar Robertson in the 1961-62 NBA season to average a triple-double during the regular season. Russell scored an NBA-best 31.6 points a game, along with 10.7 rebounds and 10.4 assists. Westbrook also set an NBA record for most triple-doubles in a season with 42. In two more NBA playoff results Tuesday night, the San Antonio Spurs beat the visiting Memphis Grizzlies 116-103 to take a 3-2 lead in that series. And the Utah Jazz scored a 96-92 road victory over the Los Angeles Clippers. Utah now leads that series 3-2. And this sunny side of sports programming note, I'll talk NBA playoffs during Thursday's show with Dan Friedel of the Voice of America's Learning English Department. Now let's go to Cooperstown, New York, where the National Baseball Hall of Fame will officially induct 5 new members on July 30th. In this encore sunny side of sports presentation, reporter Jonah Haskell tells us more about those who will receive baseball's highest honor.
Joining the ranks of baseball's greatest players is the class of 2017, our first baseman Jeff Bagwell, outfielder Tim Raines, and catcher Ivan Pudge Rodriguez. Bagwell, who spent his entire career with the Houston Astros, was a dominant and consistent hitter, as Hall of Fame president Jeff Idleson pointed out.
Jeff combined power, consistency, getting on base, and an ability to score runs to become one of baseball's premier first basemen, averaging 32 home runs annually, drove in 90 or more runs 10 times, and scored 90 or more runs 10 times as well.
Bagwell could hit for both power and average, as evidenced by his almost 450 career home runs and 297 career batting average, but he also had great discipline at the plate, leading the major leagues in walks in 1999. Bagwell combined all these skills in his debut season when he won the National League Rookie of the Year award, but that was simply a sign of things to come, as Bagwell was named to 4 All-Star teams and captured the 1994 National League MVP. The Astros' first baseman played from 1991 to 2005 when he retired at the age of 37. Bagwell is ecstatic to have made the Hall.
Like I said, surreal. Just to be in this situation, to, be in the Hall of Fame, it's crazy, man. And I couldn't be more happy to be here and just trying to take this all in. So thanks.
Joining Bagwell in the Hall of Fame's class of 2017 is outfielder Tim Raines. During his career, Raines, who is from Florida, played for 6 different teams but spent most of his time with the Montreal Expos, where he used his blinding speed to become a terror on the base paths as he led the National League in stolen bases for 4 years in a row from 1981 to 1984. Jeff Idleson also mentioned how durable Raines was during his career from 1979 to 2002.
Tim Raines was rock solid, playing in 23 seasons. Again, 19,000 have played in the major leagues. Only 20 players played longer than Tim Raines.
Raines was also a strong defensive outfielder, using his blinding speed to cover huge stretches of ground, and he was able to reach baseball's pinnacle in 1996 as a member of the World Series-winning New York Yankees. After being elected in his final year of eligibility, Raines was understandably relieved.
It's an honor. I'm so proud to be here. It's actually something I never really expected as a young kid.
The final player member of the 2017 class was just a young kid when the other two were in the twilights of their careers, but after becoming the first Puerto Rican player ever elected during his first year on the ballot, he is a worthy addition to the group. Ivan Pudge Rodriguez, a big catcher from Manatí, Puerto Rico, was one of the best-hitting backstops of all time, as he connected for 311 home runs en route to 14 All-Star selections and the 1999 American League MVP. Pudge was also a masterful defensive catcher with a cannon of an arm that helped him earn 13 American League Golden Glove Awards during his 21 years of service for 6 different teams. Rodriguez was a member of the World Series champion 2003 Florida Marlins and currently holds the record for the most games caught in a career. Pudge was excited to be going to the Hall of Fame with two players like Bagwell and Reigns.
Happy to be here with all of you guys. Being together with two good friends, even though that we never played together, but as a baseball player, we are like a family. Even though that we play against, we respect each other, play the game hard, play the game the right way.
These three outstanding players will be joined in the hall this year by two executives, John Schwerholtz, who led the Kansas City Royals and Atlanta Braves of the 80s and 90s to glory as a general manager, and Bud Selig, commissioner of Major League Baseball during one of its most trying periods, the steroid era. This year's induction ceremony for Bagwell, Reigns, and Rodriguez will be held in Cooperstown, New York on July 30th, and they will be joining a very select group.
And in the long history of professional baseball, there have been 19,000 players, just about 19,000 players, who have been talented enough and privileged enough to wear a Major League uniform. And of those 19,000, only 1%, 1 out of 100, get to the Hall of Fame.
For the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm Jonah Haskell in New York.
I'm out at Brooklyn, now I'm down in Tribeca, right next to the Narrow, but I'll be hood forever. I'm the new Sinatra, and since I made it here, I can make it anywhere. Yeah, they love me everywhere. I used to cop in Harlem, all of my Dominicanos right there up on Broadway. Pulled me back to that McDonald's, took it to my stash spot, 560 State Street. Catch me in the kitchen like a Simmons whipping pastry. Cruising down A Street, off-white Lexus, driving so slow, but BK is from Texas. Me, I'm out that Bed-Stuy, home of that boy Biggie. Now I live on Billboard, and I brought my boys with me. Say what up to Tata, still sipping my top, sitting courtside, Knicks and Nets give me high five. I be spiked out, I could trip a referee, tell by my attitude that I most definitely from.
Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Good to be here with you.
What's trending in the sports world?
Well, you know, the great American author F. Scott Fitzgerald said there are no second acts in American lives. And while that statement has been fiercely debated since he first said it, it's not true for the sports world. There are such a thing as second acts in the sports world. So today we're going to have three stories on second acts.
Second acts. I love these theme segments, Andrew.
Second acts. It's a good theme. Starting with a story that we discussed yesterday. Not long after the show ended yesterday, Dale Earnhardt Jr. officially announced his retirement from NASCAR at a press conference in Charlotte, North Carolina. Here's a bit of what Earnhardt had to say about the end of his racing career.
I think every driver thinks about retirement and what they think that looks like for them as they get to a certain age. But I wasn't really thinking about that too much over until the last couple of years. And once I started to realize how delicate things are and how quickly that can be made for you, it's something I had to start thinking about quite seriously.
Now, he talks about being a certain age. He's only 42 years old, so not really an age when most people can have the luxury of retiring.
Seems kind of young.
Very young to retire, but as we mentioned yesterday, Forbes.com says that he has over $400 million in earnings from his racing career, so he's got a nice chunk of change to live on. But a lot of people talking about that, saying it must be nice to retire at that age, but surely he can't be done. At age 42, he's got a lot of years ahead of him. He's going to want to do something with his life. So the speculation has surrounded his second act, and it focuses on two areas in particular. One is some involvement in the racing world, perhaps as a team owner. That sometimes happens when drivers retire. They become team owners. They're involved with the mechanics of the behind the scenes. We see this in a lot of sports, actually, where players will leave and they'll become coaches, or they'll become, you know, members of the front office of a team or part of the sports league. So there's a lot of speculation from fans on social media that he could be a team owner or affiliated in some way. With that, there's a lot of speculation also that he may be in the broadcast booth before long.
Okay.
This is something that has happened with other drivers. The great Jeff Gordon retired last year, and he has been in the broadcast booth commentating on races. And a lot of people saying they would love to see Earnhardt up there. He, as we said yesterday, was 14 years in a row voted the most popular driver. So it wouldn't be a big stretch to see him and his popularity broadcasting and commentating on races. So that speculation continues on social media.
Andrew, you mentioned on the show yesterday how Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s father was killed in a NASCAR race. Do you think his father's death influenced his retirement decision in terms of the danger inherent in some of these races?
Yeah, I think he realizes that life is precious, and I think he realizes that while he's had great success in racing, he's got a lot of years ahead of him where he'd like to do other things, maybe involved in the racing world in a different capacity and maybe pursue other interests. So, I think anytime there's something as profound and significant as that happens in somebody's life, it definitely impacts them. So I would not be surprised if that was an impact.
Andrew, what is your next second act?
The second act is a name known to sports fans around the world, not just tennis fans, Maria Sharapova. Of course, she's been out for the past 15 months after being banned over a drug violation, and she returns to the court today for the first time in 15 months at the Porsche Tennis Grand Prix in Stuttgart, Germany. She received a wild card for that event, which is given to promising young players who don't make the main draw, or in this case, top players who have too low a ranking because of time off the court. Now, usually that's because of injury, not because of being banned. So that's a lot of fans that are not happy with her getting this wild card, saying that it's not necessarily deserved. She should have to work her way up. She's set to face off against Roberta Vinci of Italy, who has a poor record against her. And then in the next round, if she beats Vinci, could face off against Agnieszka Radwanska, who's been a big critic among players of Sharapova. She has not had kind words to say about her and her return. But the big attention today, even before the match, was on her practice. I think it rivaled one of Roger Federer's practices to see all the fans there and all the cameras. But after 15 months, a lot of attention, a lot of those videos going around on social media. And now it turns, even before she plays at Stuttgart, to the French Open, which is the next big major tournament. She might have to actually qualify, play, and win three qualifying matches to get into the main draw. She might not get a wild card there. So a lot of attention on Maria Sharapova, wondering what her second act will bring, if she can win, if she can be back at the form that she was at previously, or if she's going to take some time to work at it.
Andrew, I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. And what is your third second act, Andrew?
The third second act involves two big names teaming up and buying a sports team. We talked about this last week, but it is finally happening. The Miami Marlins are apparently going to be purchased by an ownership group that will include Derek Jeter, the star shortstop for the New York Yankees, number two he wore throughout his career with the Yankees, and Jeb Bush, the former Florida governor, son of President George H.W. Bush and brother of President George W. Bush. Now this, you know, we talk about sports make for strange pairings, and this is a strange one. A lot of fans saying, how exactly did these two get connected to buy a sports team? A lot of interest in this because of these big names. One fan saying he hopes to live to see Derek Jeter's Marlins beat the Yankees in the World Series at least once. So that would be very interesting. But it's not uncommon for sports stars to own parts of sports teams. Michael Jordan, of course, is part owner of the Charlotte Bobcats. Magic Johnson is owner of the Los Angeles Dodgers in Major League Baseball. And sticking with tennis, Serena and Venus Williams, partial owners of the Miami Dolphins National Football League team.
Okay.
So not uncommon for some second acts in sports, even for some current sports stars to own some teams. But Jeb Bush owning a team is a little odd. Now, his brother, George W. Bush, was a part owner of the Texas Rangers in Major League Baseball, so there is some connection there. But an interesting pairing, and fans are very eager to see how this works out in the season going forward.
And that's the final act.
The final act.
The final act, at least, for this Wednesday from Andrew Palcheski. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.
And that wraps up the April 26th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Nick Ivanoff. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Healthcare workers in Namibia will be better protected thanks to training provided with U.S. assistance. Earlier this month, Deputy Minister of Health and Social Services Juliet Cavatuna and U.S. Ambassador Thomas Doten attended one of the training sessions for healthcare workers conducted by the Ministry of Health and Social Services in Windhoek on the use of respiratory protection. The training was conducted by the 3M and SIMOT corporations with support from the U.S. President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, or PEPFAR, through the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. According to the World Health Organization's 2016 Global Tuberculosis Report, TB is now the world's top infectious disease killer, claiming nearly 2 million lives each year. With an estimated case reporting rate of 489 infected persons for every 100,000 citizens and a TB-HIV co-infection rate of around 40%, Namibia is among the world's 10 highest burden countries. Deputy Minister Cavatuna and Ambassador Doten were briefed about protecting against TB transmission at health facilities through a comprehensive tuberculosis infection particulate filtering respirators. These respirators filter the air and dramatically decrease the chance of airborne TB being passed from a patient with TB to healthcare workers. The current training will build capacity among ministry healthcare workers regarding optimal use of personal protective equipment. In the last month, over 200 healthcare workers have been trained throughout the country on the use of respiratory protection. The Ministry of Health and Social Services is using this training opportunity as a means to better achieve this goal. In 2017, the U.S. government, through PEPFAR, invested $485,356 in HIV and TB programs, including funds that support the Challenge TB Project. The United States is proud to work with its partner, Namibia, to help protect the Namibian people and the healthcare workers who serve them from TB and other dangerous illnesses such as HIV/AIDS and malaria.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I am your host Shaka Salee. Every Wednesday night, the Voice of America's Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Zimbabwe's persistent economic woes cloud its 37th Independence Day celebration. An in-depth discussion on Zimbabwe on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Bungani in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We love to have you on board. This is Upfront on the Voice of America.
Listen, we need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now, this is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
It's Upfront Wednesdays at 17:30 UTC
right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.